Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at robertsrobinson.com.
From 2001 to 2006, I spent every Monday evening the exact same way during football season, talking football with Trent Green. It was called the Monday Evening Quarterback, and it lasted long after he was the quarterback of the Chiefs until my tenure ended at Sports Radio 810 in 2019. So for so many years, so many Monday nights, I got to know Trent Green so well talking about the game we both love and the game he played at such a high level for the Chiefs and others in the NFL. He is a very smart person. He loves his sport. He knows everything about it, and he's a complete and utter pro. We used to joke that we could set our show's clock. We had a master clock that lines up with whatever the world clock is. That we could set our clock by when Trent Green called, because he was always that prompt, that courteous, and that on time. It's no wonder he made so much out of his NFL career, and it's no wonder he's made so much about broadcasting. He made no bones about it when we started doing this in the early 2000s, when he was still a player. He said, "I'd like to get into broadcasting when it's over." When it was over, he was able to get into broadcasting. He did more work here locally in Kansas City. He came to the recording studios, and he practiced. He got an agent, he got a job, and he became very, very good at it. Last week, he was called into COVID duty. Yep, Charles Davis couldn't call that game in Nashville between the Bengals and the Titans. Late on Wednesday night, they called Trent Green and say, "Hey, can you go fill in? Charles David tested positive." Trent did, got great reviews, and was terrific in that game. So he knows the recent Bengals inside and out, and he knows the Chiefs inside and out as a great Kansas Cityan. I count him as a friend, a colleague, and just all around a good guy. In fact, the last time I saw him, he tackled me. He'll share that story. He'll also break down the final 13 seconds of the Chiefs like you've never heard before. He's going to tell you what they called, the exact adjustments they made, and how that can happen at the line of scrimmage. We all have our guesses. Trent's take on this is going to be a little different than what you think. You're going to get the truth out of Trent Green, exactly how and why it happened the way it did. This is a phenomenal conversation at just the right time. It's AFC Championship Week in Kansas City. Brought to you by BStock.net, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. You want a brand new 75-inch 4K TV from the Q-Series of Samsung? This is their flagship Q-Series. Just $949, that's over $200 cheaper than Best Buy. Or get the 75-inch TU-7000 for just $599, $300 cheaper than Best Buy. Or online at bstock.net. Anything, computers, electronics, printers, you name it, they've got it online at bstock.net or their warehouse in Olathe. Buck Roofing and Construction, online at rbuckroofing.com. Ron Buck's team, of course, is available 24/7 for emergencies, so you can sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Spring is right around the corner. It's going to be a great time for a roof inspection, and they will do it free. Call the number, 913-384-2680. Get your free roof inspection from Buck Roofing anywhere in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, around the Midwest. He's gone as far away as Iowa or the Lake of the Ozarks. He will come to you at Buck Roofing. Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com. TJ Vilkanskis is a custom home builder. He also does commercial properties, room additions, and the Solheim condominiums at Grandmere in Manhattan. These are upscale condominiums for second homes, rental properties, investment properties, with a swimming pool, workout facility, covered parking, and they have beautiful vistas of the Flint Hills on the Colbert Hills Golf Course. Check it out online at back9development.com. And Window World, the title sponsor of KKHI, John Gillette and his team are simply the best for less. You get a lifetime warranty. They also do doors and siding. They'll do a free analysis and estimate for you. 0% financing is available. They're the official windows of the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you make the call, they'll come right out and see you. Anywhere in Kansas or Missouri and parts of Iowa, it's Window World at 816-799-0820. Simply the best for less. Trent Green is our playoff AFC championship game conversation on KKHI. Hit it!
The KKHI conversation is brought to you by Fry Orthodontics, where your smile is just the start. Online at fryorthodontics.com.
Well, the last time I saw our guest was a few weeks ago at T-Mobile Center in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and I now can put on my resume I've been sacked by a quarterback in the NFL, which is a very rare thing, but Trent Green got me pretty good just outside T-Mobile Center. It was great to see you, and we were down there for a basketball tournament with people we knew and whatnot. It was just great to see you and having fun and enjoying some college basketball. You really love all sports, don't you?
I do. And I actually, one of my nephews plays for the University of Illinois. So they were down there playing and we were just, we were going down to the game. And I saw you and I thought you saw me and I saw the group of guys you were with. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to go up and grab him real quick, kind of surprise him. And I definitely surprised you because you had no idea who it was. So I had to apologize to you quite a bit because I was like, man, I thought you saw me. You're like, no, I just thought somebody was like grabbing me. So yes, I did officially sack you because the whistle would have blown before I got you to the ground.
Well, the best part was I've got some great friends, don't I? I'm sitting there struggling with you. I'm like trying to break free and kicking like a little schoolgirl up against big NFL quarterback, 6'4". It's got a hold of me. And my friends are just sitting there watching the thing happen. I'm like, hey, with friends like that, who needs any enemies?
Oh, the funny thing is like the look on your face, you kept looking at your buddies like, you guys aren't going to come. And they just were sitting there because they could see who it was. They could see it was me. And they knew I wasn't going to do you any harm. But you kept looking like, what are you guys doing? You know, it was a fun moment. Great to see you. And so great way to, segue into all this great football talk. But I love all sports. You and I have talked about this for years. I'm a college basketball junkie. I loved basketball before I even started playing football, way back as a kid and have been a fan of basketball for a long time. And then college basketball in particular, you know, going to a school like Indiana, I got to see some great, great teams. Calvert Chaney was the same age, same class as me. So we made a Final Four and you know, when the Fab Five was at Michigan, they came into Sibley Hall a couple times. I mean, there's some really good basketball I got to see when I was in college, and I've just continued to be a fan of it. And like I said, now I have a nephew playing in the Big Ten, and get to watch him and continue to stay on top of it.
And they're good. If they keep getting better, they got a chance to be a Final Four team. That's a really good Illinois team. So that's awesome. All right. Well, the last thing we'll do, and we won't revisit this ever again, on a scale of 1 to 10, when you had a hold of me, and I was trying to either work my way out or fight my way out or whatever it was that I was doing because you were behind me and you had me sacked like a quarterback. You had your arms around me. On a scale of 1 to 10, seriously, what kind of fight was I putting up?
Oh, I'd say the fight you were putting up was at least a 7.
Oh, come on.
You were putting up a – oh.
I had no chance of getting loose. I could never have gotten loose.
I'm not saying you had a chance to get loose, but I'm saying that's why I didn't let go because at first I was just coming up to surprise you. Then it was for me. It was like, okay, I better hang on because he's gonna like
swing,
you know, get me with an elbow or something. Like trying to, you were trying to really get going. Like you really thought it was someone grabbing you. And so I was like, man, I gotta hang on here because otherwise he's gonna catch me with an elbow or something to the head. I said, that's the last thing I want to happen. So so I'll give it a 7. You were really working to get free.
Yeah, the middle-aged man trying to break free from an NFL star kind of fight. Yeah, that's good. That was going to work out real well for me. I'm really glad I didn't break free and swing an elbow because that would have been the end of me. And rightfully
so. You maybe would have gotten a different reaction.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Exactly. All right, let's go back to last weekend before we look forward. We got obviously these two big games coming up on Sunday, Trent, but my goodness, what a weekend. The ratings are off the charts. Your game on Saturday with the Titans and Bengals was huge, but then the Chiefs, they've updated these ratings. The first time I hear these ratings, I always think they're a little low. Nielsen has upgraded these things. Almost 60 million people watched the end of the Chiefs-Bills game in the last 13 seconds in particular, which was, I feel like we've seen it all, but I'm just going to stand by this. I've been watching this sport since I was a little kid, Trent. I've been watching for 50 years. I've been watching the NFL. That's the greatest game I've ever seen. I still don't know how to put into words or explain to anybody what I saw. What do you make of that Chiefs-Bills game?
You know, I really think, you know, it's just sometimes you just shake your head and you're just like, I really just saw something special there. And you could kind of tell by the way the game was unfolding that you were witnessing two of the best young quarterbacks in the league and just some of the plays that were being made by both guys, both with their legs and throwing the football. And, you know, you think about, you're like, okay, you could just tell from like the first quarter of the game, you're like, this is going to be one of those games where it's just going to be, you know, to use a boxing analogy, it's just going to be back and forth, one of those classic heavyweight battles. Because, and then to see it unfold, the final 2 minutes of that game, you know, the lead changes, the touchdowns, the fourth down conversions, the incredible throws, the incredible catches, I mean, just the communication. Now that we've even, you know, we're several days removed from it, and NFL Films is releasing, you know, some of the stuff they picked up on microphones and some of the different angles that they had, and it just makes it that much better. You get done with that game, and I've used this before, but you're exhausted. Whether you're a fan, you're a player, you're a coach, you're an announcer, you just get done with it, and you sit down, and you just take a deep breath, and you're like, my goodness, I'm excited. I mean, I know I'm speaking for a lot of fans. Whether you're Chiefs fans, Bills fans, or just fans of football, I couldn't go to bed. Like right after the game, it's not like I had any chance of going to bed.
None.
Just because the adrenaline of that moment and of that game. And as you said, Kevin, it was all weekend long, all four games, but for it to culminate in the way that it did in those final couple minutes in overtime, it was phenomenal.
I've spent some time this week thinking about what it would be like to be a Bills fan. And I think the hardest part, you mentioned the NFL Films and the audio that's been out there. And we saw Mahomes with 8 seconds left, I guess it was, the second play of the 13 great seconds, where he says, Kels, do it. He goes, blue 80. He's like, Kels, do it. And I mean, he's literally, I guess if you're playing defense, you're thinking maybe this is a fake, maybe whatever. But everybody there, the Bills could hear it. If Kelsey could hear it, the Bills could hear it. And then we saw the film of what occurred. And Travis Kelce, with 13 seconds left, went over to Tyreek Hill and said, you know, if they're going to play what they're playing, I can get out in front of you, stay to the inside, I'll get out and create some trouble. And he does, and they pick up 19 yards or whatever it is. And then during the timeout, he tells Patrick Mahomes, dude, if they're playing like that, the seam is open, and I'll have it. And Patrick's like, okay. And then what? Tell me, walk me through this. Then Andy calls a play. And Mahomes and Kelce just decide, we don't care what the play is. We've got our own play. Is that what happened?
So, yeah. So let's go over the whole 13 seconds.
Okay.
So let's go back to the kickoff. So I've heard a lot of people say, you know, why kick it into the end zone or why not squib kick it? My argument to both of those is I would kick it off like normal, but I would kick it as high as possible. And I'd tell the kicker, make sure it lands at the 10. Now, I'd really want it to land at the 5, but I'd tell him the 10, so there was a 5-yard cushion in case he messed it up. And if you say the 5 and then it happens to catch the wind or whatever, maybe it's too long. But by that, you guarantee that they're going to have to field the ball. If they guarantee you have to field the ball, the clock starts running. So it's going to take at least 4 or 5 seconds, maybe even more, depending on, you know, how long the run back takes. So that's the first thing the Bills messed up on. I think If you kick the squib, we've seen so many times where it hits the guy, or and then all of a sudden the ball's at the 40, or it goes, or because of the shape of the football, it bounces sideways and goes out of bounds, and then you no time's off, and they get the ball at the 40. I mean, there's so many things, at least in my mind, that can go wrong because of the shape of the football. So kick it high, kick it short, make them have to field it in the field of play, is what I would have done. Then when you get to those two plays, so let's go to the first of those plays. Kelce was in a bunch formation with Tyreek, and the fact that the Bills played like a prevent defense and a boundary defense, like the Chiefs didn't have any timeouts. That's what they kind of left the middle of the field open and protected the boundaries and protected the deep throw. So that's really something you run more of when you know they don't have any timeouts. So that was a mistake on their part. The fact that they lined up the way that they did, and it was incredible that Kelce had that foresight before even going on the field to tell Tyreek, listen, if this is what they're going to do, because everybody kind of figured with how far they had to go and the speed that Tyreek has that they wanted to try and get the ball in his hands. So the fact that they had a defender right there, that was mainly there for Tyreek. Well, all you have to do is mirror him, which is what Kelce was doing. He just wanted to try and get in the way. And Tyreek's speed is what got that yard. I believe it was 19 yards.
Yeah.
Now on the next one, you know, Kelce was isolated, I believe, on the left side by himself, and the bunch formation was to the other side. So because so much attention was being placed on Tyreek, and a lot of the bodies were over there. They had outside leverage on the corner. They had a safety deep to the receiver. They had a linebacker to the inside. So Kelce did a great job of releasing. My guess is, to answer your question, my guess is the play that was called, usually what we would do on the backside in that type of formation at the end of a game, usually that backside was either going to run a deep out so you could catch it and get out of bounds, or it was going to run a deep in because you knew you had a timeout. You were going to try and get in between the linebackers and in front of the safeties in that type of shell. You would try and find a lane in the middle of the field to be an outlet in the middle of the field. Well, I thought it was great. The communication that we've now been able to witness and hear is, why go ahead and bend it inside? Because if there was a linebacker to the inside. So in reality, it would be to get to that next window. Well, there may not be enough time to get to that next window, get down on the ground and call the timeout. So the fact that Kelce, you know, had that in mind, let me expand the outside defender and then nod it, hit me up the seam, and then I can get down and get the timeout. So there is that, you know, there is improv happens all the time. But in those moments, the fact that, you know, that Travis was that aware and that dialed in to everything going on speaks volume about who he is as a player. We all know the physical things. We all know the dancing, and he's great on the mic, and he's, you know, likes to have a good time, all those things. But that really gave us insight into amazing. The mental part of his game and what he's looking at and what he sees. I thought it was tremendous.
Amazing. Now, the Chiefs won't say this, I don't think. So I want to verify that this is what was actually going on. The original play call with Kelce on the backside there was, he's headed outside. He's going to go outside. It's what the Bills are basically trying to prevent. They're trying to keep you from completing one, stepping out of bounds. The defense was playing to not give up a touchdown, near as I could tell. And the offense Correct. Was playing to move the middle of the field to kick a field goal and go to overtime, which was amazing. I mean, two different teams, two completely different strategies. So Kelce then says, do it, do it, do it, Kels, do it. That means he's going to cut to the inside. Then I watch the replay, and Mahomes throws the ball before Kelce cuts either way. And I'm like, he had to have complete and utter trust that Kelce heard him and was going to move up the seam and go to his right instead of his left. And then, of course, the ball's right in his hands on the numbers. They gain 24 yards. Kelce slides and calls timeout. It was a miracle that Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, neither one, tried to make a big play. Just get your 20 or 25, hit the ground, and call timeout. It was just spectacular.
Yeah, and it, you know, one of the audio clips that I heard was Kelce said something about the seam. He's like, hey, if they play that same way, the seam's there. So my guess is that's why Mahomes was able to throw the ball early. He was throwing it up the seams. Now, in order to do that, there's got to be so much trust. Because you throw it up the seam, and all of a sudden Kelce breaks in or breaks out, and then there's a defensive back or a defensive player standing there catching in his chest, and there's nobody around. I mean, so to throw the ball in the time that he did and not having worked it or gone through it or any of those kinds of things, repped it, yeah, that's phenomenal trust in each other. That's just playing with each other for a long time. That's knowing where a guy likes the ball in terms of catching it, understanding the moment. That's one of those special plays that the Chiefs fans will be talking about for a long, long time.
And I remember Andy Reid saying in Patrick Mahomes' first year as starter, which would have been his second year in the league, people were like, oh my God. And I think he won the MVP that year. Like, oh, this is unbelievable watching this guy that he's a finished. And Andy's like, he's not a finished product. He's like, it's going to take 4 or 5 years before he gets all of this. And he was, I thought it was a load of hooey, but I think he was right. And I'll ask you, even like the 2019 year when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, would he have been able to do that? Would he be able to get to the line in that moment with 8 seconds left and see the formation of the defense and know that seam is there and tell Kelce, do it, do it, do it, and here it is, we've got this. Would he have done that 2 years ago, or is this the beginning of the end for the final maturation process for Patrick Mahomes?
Well, what I've learned in the few short seasons that we've witnessed Mahomes is not to doubt anything. Okay. So right. To go back and say he couldn't have done that, I wouldn't want to do that, but I would say it'd be a lot less likely. Because when you're in there initially, and yes, his first season playing 50 touchdowns and MVP and, you know, obviously in position to go to the Super Bowl, even though, you know, the New England overtime game and those kinds of things. So he was phenomenal at that point. But what did we find out like a year or two later when Mahomes was, what was that show, the barbershop deal with LeBron James? And he's like, yeah, I just started reading coverages for them. I didn't know anything about coverages. And do you remember that? That was, yes, like he'd already won an MVP, had already won a, yes, Super Bowl. And he's sitting there telling LeBron James that he doesn't read coverages and he just started to learn how to read coverages. So the fact that all of that is all coming together, that's what makes me believe that he wouldn't necessarily have been able to do that that first year or that second year, that he's continuing to grow and get better, because he let us peek behind the curtain with that comment to LeBron in that, hey, I'm just learning it. I'm learning defenses. I'm learning how to read it. I'm learning how to make adjustments. And I know Andy has thought very highly of him from day one. Alex Smith has thought very highly of him, you know, from day one in terms of his mental approach and what he's able to grasp and what he's able been able to do even from a rookie year on. His development and his work that he put in with Mike Kafka and Eric Bieniemy those first couple of seasons has continued to grow into. We are definitely seeing the maturation of Patrick Mahomes in understanding the position. And the scary thing for opposing defenses is it seems to only be getting better as you get those moments and those experiences. Everything slows down. I can tell you that as a former player. When I was in my 30s, it was a lot different than when I was in my 20s, because it just, the game just takes it morphs into something different in that how it slows down and how it all appears and how you can visualize things. Because so much of the position is once you get the play, you're visualizing everything and like what adjustments come off of that play. Now, the difference is the system that Andy Reid runs and the system that Patrick Mahomes is allowed to run is much different than the system we ran. There wasn't a lot of changing plays at the line of scrimmage for us. Everything in our system was built in. It was, okay, if they're doing this, we go this side of the field, we do this, we're going to this side of the field. If they do this, we're going to do this. And there was always an answer built into every play. Now, it always didn't work that way, and defenses got better and started to figure out those things. But the freedom that Patrick has and a number of these young quarterbacks have at the line of scrimmage to get into a good play tells you the evolution of the position and what they're able to do from reading defenses and making those adjustments. It's scary to think how much better Patrick's going to be, because he's only 26 years old. So, you know, how good is he going to be, you know, when he's 30? It's scary.
And it's remarkable how much he's improved and the entire offense has improved against what stopped them in the Super Bowl last year. Because they struggled with it earlier this year, but they figured that out. I mean, they've got this down. We're talking about two pretty relatively short throws in 11 seconds to get the game tied, to keep your season alive. And I think the quarterback of 2 years ago would have just been heaving it downfield. I think he's looking for a 50-yard play and a timeout, or a pass interference and a timeout, and hoping for a field goal. And I actually think that's what Buffalo was thinking he was going to do. He's going to take two heaves downfield. They're going to try to catch one of them or get pass interference and call a timeout, whatever it may be. I guess that's kind of what I thought they were trying to defend against, but maybe not. If they were guarding the edges, that was just bad coaching if that's what they were doing. But
yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. I think that a couple years ago, that's probably what they would have done. They probably would have said, hey, Kelsey, go down there. We're going to try and get a jump ball and, you know, try and get a call, try and, you know, pass interference, that kind of thing. And I think that's what the defense thought. I think because of what happened last year in the Super Bowl, and I think because of the way the season started, starting off 3-4, and basically teams were saying, we're not going to blitz you. Patrick Mahomes is either the least blitzed quarterback or one of the least blitzed quarterbacks in the NFL because of all the talent that's surrounding him. They don't want to leave those one-on-ones. So, okay, let's make him throw underneath. Let's make them have long drives and work it down the field. And early on in the season, they weren't doing that. They made those adjustments, got on a nice, you know, 8-game winning streak and figured it out. And Patrick figured it out because his interceptions that first half of the season, what do you have, like 12 the first half of the season, yeah, and then 11 or 12, and then hardly anything since then. So once he started to understand that, the mental part of not, you know, not having to force it, it definitely changed the season around. And I think it came into play. I think it came into play at the end of that game as well.
And they started throwing it shorter and behind the line of scrimmage and all these other things they do. And it's worked. And then I heard the unbelievable stat, which I would not have guessed this year. I would have guessed it maybe in years past when we saw the longer passes. Over 70% of his completed passes this year were either for a first down or a touchdown. And I'm like, wait, what? Like 75% of the kids' passes move the sticks or score. I'm like, that's just crazy. I mean, it's they're so much fun to watch. And the game in Cincinnati was fun to watch, but the officiating drove us all crazy. That was a crew that was kind of ripped apart by COVID, and they had a lot of officials working together that day that hadn't worked together. And we could see the difference between the regular season and the postseason on Sunday. It was, for me, it was very stark. I know I'd been watching football for at least 2 hours, and I think it was in the third quarter, and Jim Nance said, and that's the first penalty on the Chiefs today. And I went, okay, we're in the playoffs. This is the way it's supposed to work, right? Unless it's procedural and obvious, let them play football. How does that change this game? You had the Bengals last week. We've seen Joe Burrow be great. We saw him torch the Chiefs. There were a lot of problems with the Chiefs' corners and the officiating in that game. How is this game different, or is it?
Well, I do agree with you, and I think it's something that the NFL needs to address or at least talk about, because it's pretty well known that the way things are called in the preseason are different than the way they are in the regular season, and then it's pretty evident that the way they're called in the regular season is not the way they're called in the playoffs. And no better play depicted that or showed that when Tyreek threw up the peace sign. As soon as he did it, I'm screaming at the TV, right? No, because I knew immediately. I'm like, that literally was on the NFL highlight reel of what is considered taunting. They threw, you know, Tyreek throwing up the peace sign as he's running by. That is on the video from a couple years ago. That is a taunting penalty, and I'm screaming at the TV. I'm like, you just cost the touchdown. I'm like, no, and then I'm waiting for the little sign in the corner to say flag, flag, flag. I'm like, there's no flag. Okay. So they, you know, and I think he put it up and then he realized, oh my gosh, I can't, you know.
It was stupid. Yeah, it was dumb.
Yeah.
Because it would have been, just 15 yards from right there, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. The touchdown wouldn't have counted because it was prior to getting in the end zone. Now, if it's taunting once you get in the end zone, that's different. But it was prior to him crossing the goal line. So I literally audibly like screamed in the house. Too. I'm like, no.
I went, oh my God. Because I just thought, how stupid is that? And then I got a couple of buddies that understand football quite a bit. And one of them goes, they're not calling that in this game. And he's jumping up and down screaming. He's like, touchdown, they're not calling that. I'm like, really? You got faith that they're not calling that? Because I didn't have faith in that.
No, I kept waiting. Like I said, I kept waiting for something to pop up in the corner saying flag. Or, you know, I'm like, they must not have seen it on the field because it's coming. And it never did. So, but anyway, back to your question. You know, this is going to be a physical game. This could literally be every bit the type of game that we just saw against the Bills. Because if you go back to, and I know the Chiefs had a huge lead in the first half against the Bengals, but if you look at the weapons that Joe Burrow has on that offense, very similar to the weapons that Patrick Mahomes has, and the speed of both teams, and the fact that, you know, it's going to be which team makes mistakes and which team benefits from those mistakes. And, you know, or it could just be a slugfest like we saw with the Bills. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I do think it'll be much different in that the officials won't have as much of an impact on it. But I also believe because of the personnel that both teams have, that this has the potential to be one of the most exciting playoff games, you know, that we've seen, which is hard to say coming off of the Bills game.
Yeah, and my final thought on Tyreek's peace sign, I saw this on Twitter somewhere, and the person was right, whoever posted it. It was a very astute point. It's the first time anybody taunted a tackler that was in front of them. That guy was still ahead of Tyreek Hill. He's like out in front of him, between him and the goal line, and he's like, no, I'm still going to get past you. I'm taunting you while you're in front of me. Normally, he looks behind him and taunts somebody. That dude was still in front of him, and he was getting taunted. Yes. That's crazy.
Yes. No, that was a very astute, because he did. He threw it up, and the guy, I mean, I want to say, was it Espinosa or Milano or some, one of the linebackers?
Yeah.
And he just threw it up. He like did it in front of us, like, oh my gosh, normally with an angle like that, but he's a different level of speed.
Who is the teammate you played with that most likely would have taunted while scoring? Priest Holmes?
Well, remember Priest used to do that little...
Yeah.
He had that little, opened up his arms wide and, you know, kind of did the stride going into the end zone.
That might be illegal now. That might be a penalty now.
It probably is, because he would look right at the defender, yeah, and he would open his arms wide, and he would, and a lot of times he would drop the ball, and we're like, Priest, if you're going to do that, put the ball in your lead hand. So the ball is across the goal line. And because if you remember, there were several times he had it in the backhand and he would cross the goal line and then drop the ball. And we would tell him, we're like, Priest, that is like, if you go back and replay that, it is literally within fractions of a second of not like being across the goal line. Like you dropped it too close to it, not cross, because he had it in the backhand. Man. So that would definitely, because he would look at defenders when he did it, that would, in today's rules, that would be a taunting.
I loved him, man. I mean, he wasn't just a great player for what I did for a living and, you know, covering the team or going out and getting interviews. He was always so engaging to talk to. He's doing well. And didn't he just bang the drum here a couple of weeks ago? They brought him back to do the drum thing, and he's doing well.
Yeah, I did. That's what I saw. Yeah, I saw that. He's kept his foundation going, and he's doing a lot of good down in San Antonio, down in Texas, and continues to do a lot of good work in the community. So, yeah, I'm glad to see they had him back beating the drum.
That's awesome. No, and Tony Gonzalez, your other teammate, I saw now, he's doing a podcast. He's put his phone number on Twitter for people to text him. Have you seen this trend? I'm sure he has people who sort through him, so he's probably got two phones. But he's got a text line on it, like his social media and stuff. Text me for whatever. I don't know. This is like the new thing. You're gonna start putting your number out there for people to call and text you, Trent?
No. I barely tweet as it is.
Right.
That was something that when I joined, I'm not a social media guy, and although I've been told by lots of people that I need to get on Instagram and I need to do this, because if you get so many followers, you could be considered an influencer and make money that way, and however all that stuff works. And I know there's a lot of people make a lot of money doing that stuff. That just doesn't interest me.
I know.
So as far as putting my number out there, I didn't know that Tony was doing that. And I was actually, you know, he's doing, or maybe hasn't done much of it at all. I was looking for him on Fox, because he was doing a bunch of that stuff for Fox. And then, I don't know if his contract is done with Fox, or if he just does some of it and not all the time. I know Olsen's been on there more, and Michael Vick's been on there more, and I've seen less of Tony. Maybe his contract's done and he just decided to do more of the podcast.
His profile says he does a podcast, and you can text him at this number, and it doesn't say anything about Fox. So his contract was up. But when that happened, he said he was going to start making movies, or he's in Hollywood and he's working with people on movie production or something else. So he must be.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to switch over and be The Rock. And I think that's going to be hard.
Well, you know, Kevin, for a long time, that was always Tony's ambition. And even when he joined on at CBS, he wanted to. So part of his deal for being on the NFL Today was he also got to be in some of the CSIs and some of the other TV shows. It was like, I think that was, I don't know specifically, but I think it was written in that he got to do some shows, because he was on multiple shows while he was with CBS. And then I think the move to Fox had more to do with the fact that as we all know, I mean, he lives in California, lives in LA, and Fox Studios is in LA. So instead of having to go to New York every week, where CBS Studios are, he could stay in LA, and then Fox Studios in LA, and then all the, you know, majority of the movie productions and everything are out there. So I think that had a big part to do with it. He's always wanted that, movies, TV. I know he worked for a long time to become, even though his last name's Gonzalez, he wasn't fluent in Spanish, but, you know, he spent several years going to school to become more fluent and learn the language. So I don't know if that's part of it. I know his kids are younger, so it's nice for him to be home and be around them as much, because I know he's pretty heavily involved with that as well. So, I'm happy for him. He's doing what he wants to do, and happy that he's doing.
Yeah,
it.
I sense that Tony Gonzalez is going to be just fine. So, it's been a
lot of
time.
He'll be all right.
He'll be all right. I think he'll be all right. All right. Two quickies here to finish with. Don't need a complete breakdown of San Francisco and the Rams, but if you were playing in this game, either team, does it matter that it's a division game? Like, I was really happy that the Chargers didn't come to Kansas City in round one. I didn't want to see that. I was glad that Pittsburgh came. It was almost like a week off. I guess if it were me, I'd think I really don't want to play in the division, but you're a quarterback and a really smart guy. Would you see that for you personally as an advantage to play a division opponent, or would you rather not do that right here?
You know, there's obviously the familiarity with one another. There's the rivalry that goes into it as well. I didn't realize this, but I want to say the 49ers have beaten the Rams six consecutive times.
Yes, and some of them not close.
I knew that the 49ers had won both games this year, but I didn't realize it was a six-game stretch, and which just blows my mind away, because that defense and what they had offensively and what the Rams had done, I mean, it really – and San Francisco, you know, had a couple – you know, when Garoppolo was hurt, they just weren't very good. I mean, it's like, so what is it that Kyle Shanahan knows about the Rams and how to attack them, the fact that they've won six straight times? So, you know, I think if you're the 49ers, you feel really comfortable because you're like, well, I'm dialed in on this. And if you're the Rams, you're like, okay, we got to fix, you know, just a couple weeks ago, we were up 17-0 on these guys and they came back and beat us. So, you know, what is it that, I guess the mental part of it, you would think would work in the 49ers' favor just because they've had the thing going. But if you look at what the Rams, well, I should say the Rams for 3 quarters and 8 minutes of the Tampa Bay game,
right,
looked like a really, really good team. And then Brady did Brady things and brought them back. But, it's kind of scary to play a team that you lost to six straight times.
This isn't a great comparison because the Niners are way better than the Broncos. But Patrick Mahomes, the stat going into the game at the end of the year this year was Mahomes was 8-0 against the Broncos, but only had 9 touchdowns in those 8 games, which isn't the worst. That's not the end of the world, but it's certainly different than what he does against the rest of the league. And we've seen the Chiefs struggle. They'd beaten him 22-9 earlier in the year and didn't look great offensively. And we saw how close that game was. When the Chiefs played Denver, you just sort of expect that Denver's defense is going to give the Chiefs a little bit of trouble. And that's what I see here. And I wonder how Matt Stafford and that offense goes into this game and has any real confidence that, hey, we can go out and score 34 points today. That's got to be a hard thing to be thinking about this week, isn't it?
Well, I think the matchup is not one that favors the Rams, just those things you talked about. So Matthew Stafford is one of the highest rated quarterbacks in the NFL when he's blitzed. So when teams decide to bring pressure, you get a lot of one-on-one. He's got, you know, between Kupp and Jefferson and Beckham, I mean, he's got a ton of weapons there. And his ability to take advantage of those one-on-ones is huge. The 49ers don't like to blitz a lot. They don't. They rely on Bosa. You know, they rely on that defensive front four to get pressure, which allows them to play zone and to drop back, which isn't necessarily something that Stafford, you know, thrives at. You know, the 49ers are really good at running the football. The Rams defense is an attack style defense. They want to get after the quarterback. They're one of the leading teams in sacks. They're one of the leading teams in interceptions because they like to bring heat. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo is not very good against pressure, but that's why there's so much balance. If you look at what the 49ers do and what Kyle Shanahan does and what Garoppolo's good at, is they mix it up between the rookie Elijah Mitchell, who has had a really good year, would have been over 1,000 yards if not for all the injuries. You know, Deebo Samuel, about halfway through the year, they started realizing, okay, we're going to change what we do. They were a very pass-heavy team early in the year. We're going to change what we do and focus more on the run. We're going to get Deebo involved in the run game. He's a low center of gravity. He's not a normal wide receiver carrying the football. He's going to try running over people like a running back would, and he's not afraid to run in between the tackles. So now you have the combination of Mitchell and Samuel running the football. Kittle is healthy and playing better, so you get the play action involved in it. You get Ayuk and some of the speed guys on the outside. You get that run game going. Now all of a sudden it opens things up for Garoppolo and the, you know, the play action pass, which doesn't necessarily fit well with what the Rams do defensively. So I just think from a matchup standpoint, you know, there's some things where the 49ers have had a great deal of success. If you look at the losses, and I know I'm rambling on a lot about this.
No.
I know if you look at the losses that the Rams have had this year, you know, they gave up over 200 yards rushing to Arizona and lost to them early in the year. They've given up over, I think the last game to San Francisco, they had 135, San Francisco did. And in the first matchup they lost, San Francisco had 165. So teams that are able to run the football against the Rams have had success. Now, Baltimore ran for probably 160, 180 yards, something like that. Baltimore lost that game, but it was 20-19, and it was turnovers that cost them. the Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears, they ran for over 100 yards, but they were minus two in the turnovers, both of those teams were. So I think there's a formula there to beat the Rams, and I think it's one that Kyle Shanahan and what that offensive mind likes to do. I think that they have a good way of attacking it. It's just when you look at all the weapons, both offensive and defensive side of the ball, that's why everybody picks the Rams in these matchups every time. Because you look at it on paper, and the paper talent-wise, the Rams should win this football game.
Right.
But if they don't turn the ball over and they're able to slow down the running game, then they should win the game. But if San Francisco is able to dictate the pace by rushing four on defense and by running the football on offense, you know, then it could be, you know, then it could be another close one down to the wire.
Yeah. Should be an awful lot of fun. The final question. You played for Coach Dick Vermeil. The Chiefs gave up a draft pick to acquire. Then he brought you to town. Sean Payton has resigned. Everybody thinks the Dallas Cowboys are going to make a play at Sean Payton, even though they still have Mike McCarthy there. If not them, then maybe the Giants or the Raiders. What would the going price be to trade for Sean Payton to become your head coach?
I think what you're it's going to have to be somewhere in the top three rounds, right? First, second, third round.
I mean,
pick.
It's got to be a first round. I assume it'd be a first round pick and maybe something else the second year.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a compensation package kind of thing. I would think. With that being said, I don't think it's going to happen. Really? I think McCarthy will stay there. I think Sean's gonna spend a year in TV, and he could be, you know, Bill Cowher jumped into TV and the thought was he was going to do it for a few years and jump back in. And Bill's like, this is a great gig. I get to talk football, study football, but I don't have to deal with all the other stuff. You know, same. There's a number of coaches that have jumped into it and have enjoyed it. And so I think that Sean's one of those guys that'll jump into TV for a year or two, but then we'll jump back in. Kind of like Bruce Arians, you know, he jumped in our booth for a year.
Yep.
And was like, I got to get back in. You know, there's something about the locker room. There's something about, you know, being on the field, those kinds of things that I think Bruce missed from day one. I think he enjoyed working with us and he enjoyed being on our crew. But there's just a difference, you know, being on the field, being in the locker room. So that wouldn't surprise me with Sean, but I think he'll spend a year in TV and see how he likes it and spend some time with his kids. And even though his kids are a little bit older now, but, you know, just kind of freshen back up a little bit. But yeah, if they're going to do something, it, like you said, it either have to be a first round or a high round pick with some other things thrown in there.
It'll be fascinating to watch. His name's going to be talked about a lot. Trent, I can't thank you enough for being on with us. This is so much fun watching this football team every week, and your insight is just phenomenal. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it, and we wish you and your family all the best going forward.
All right. Appreciate it, Kevin. Always good catching up.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.